Saul, he let the Amalekites go when God said, no, I've determined that they are utterly to be destroyed. And now Saul was killed by an Amalekite. You see, when you look at biblical typology, the Amalekites are a type of the flesh. And when we put that in a spiritual application to our lives, think about it, our flesh. We're a new creation in Christ Jesus. We no longer walk after the flesh, but we walk after the Spirit. Give no place for the flesh to fulfill the desires or the lust of the flesh.
As we gather, may your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came.
Aloha kakou e komo mai. Welcome to As We Gather, the Bible teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel Honolulu with Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. Today, Pastor Bill continues in 2 Samuel chapters 1 and 2.
We'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came.
This is a brand new series that we're starting, and we've entitled it King David Uncensored, the best and the worst of a man after God's own heart. Because that's what David was, a man after God's own heart. And we see the best of David. In fact, the first 10 chapters here, we're going to see some really good things. But then we're going to see some very troubling things, things that we want to stay away from in our own life. And yet we have the same temptations as David has. But it's really an incredible book. And many will say, well, David is a type of Christ. Yes, he is a type of Christ to a point. In fact, we'll see some of that tonight. But then there are some things where we see, well, David has flesh just like the rest of us. And so in one sense, because David, God's choice for the king of Israel, and we know that Jesus Christ is going to fulfill his covenant to Israel, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he's going to reign there on Zion for 1,000 years. And so David, in that sense, is that type. And there's some characteristics, attributes about David that are very commendable. And we think, wow, he must have got those from Jesus because it's pretty much like the Lord. And so we will see that as we go. Now, all through 2 Samuel, we're going to see the reign of King David. And as I mentioned, the best of King David, the worst of King David. And remember, God called him a man after God's own heart. Even with all his flaws and all his weaknesses, he's a man after God's own heart. Now, we saw in 1 Samuel, if you were with us, the reign of Saul. And Saul, he had natural abilities and he had God-given opportunities, but he didn't use those. He basically was a horrible king. He was self-willed, and he rejected the rule of God over his life. And we find that in his reign, I mean, there's so many negative examples, and it seems like when he started taking that slide downward, he went really deep downward. And in the last chapter of 1 Samuel, we saw the death of Saul. But in 1 Samuel, another thing that we see at the same time, although Saul was a horrible king and did horrible things, he started out good, but he ended up bad. At the same time, we see the trials and the tribulations of David. David, after Samuel anoints him as king, it seems like for the rest of his young life and his young adult life, probably at least a dozen years, maybe more, somewhere around there, you find the trials and the tribulations that David is going through. Why? Well, God was making a man of God. And that's always the case for any man or any woman. That future ruler, David, he had to be ruled. If you're going to be a ruler, if you're going to be an overseer, if you're going to be a manager, you have to be managed. You have to be managed by something higher than yourself. God is what God is looking for in David. He's going to be the future ruler of Israel, but he had to be ruled if he was going to have an effective kingship. And it's always through adversity. A person must be tested before they're trusted. And if they're not tested, they can't be trusted. And so for those 12 years, as we see the trials, the tribulations, all that David had to go through, we find that that was God was making him a man of God, making him that ruler he had called him to be. And that's what God does in our lives. And let me say this. I think it takes a lot longer than just 12 years. I mean, David, even after that point, David was being tested. And there are times where David failed. I find in leadership, it never ends. It never stops because of the attitude. It's all in the attitude. I find my attitude stink in certain things. And it's probably more discouraging to me than... You probably don't see those things, but more discouraging to me than anybody that may know about those, my wife, and those close to me. But those things I hate, those attitudes I hate that are not Christ-like. But you see, that's what God is working in us, a Christ-like attitude. Unless we go through aggravation, unless we go through trials and sometimes suffering, that's the testing that God is using, that he might trust us with his ministry. Now, what we see here as we come into 2 Samuel chapter 1, we see David and his men. David and his men have just wiped out the Amalekites as the Amalekites made a raid on Ziklag, the place that David and his men and his families were dwelling. And the Amalekites had taken the families, they had burnt the city, and David made a raid on their compound and obliterated almost all of the Amalekites, destroyed them. And he brought his family back. None of the family were hurt, harmed in any way. And now he's back at Ziklag. Yeah, the city was burned, but it wasn't destroyed completely. And one of the things that we see from one of the other historical books in 1 Chronicles chapter 12, we see at this time when David is in Ziklag, we see these skilled warriors, these mighty men of God beginning to come and attach themselves to David. Now, this is over and above the 600 that he already had. In fact, it says, and a great army of God was with David. You see that in 1 Chronicles 12. So now what we're finding here in chapter 1, let's begin. Now it came about after the death of Saul, when David had returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, that David remained 2 days in Ziklag. And it happened on the third day that, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul, and his clothes torn, dust on his head. And it came about when he came to David that he fell to the ground and prostrated himself. I think we need to look long and hard at this fellow that's coming to David. He's coming, and you wonder, is he for real or is he just scheming? You know, if you've been in the church for as long as I have and been a leader in the church, you see that there are people that come in. They're not real. They're scheming. They're coming in and they've got an agenda. I've seen that more often than I would like to see it. So when we see David in dealing with this individual, here, notice he comes with the signs of mourning, dust in his head, clothes torn. So he's coming as though he's mourning. He's in grief over what's taken place with Israel. He's coming in a way of humility as well. He's prostrating himself at the feet of David. And that's why we have to ask, is he real? Or is he scheming to get on David's team and to get on David's side and to ingratiate himself with David? That's a big question. Because whether he's telling the truth or not, that is another big question, and the commentators are divided over that. And as we go on, we will see what we're talking about. And David, verse 3, said to him, "From where do you come?" And he said to him, "I have escaped from the camp of Israel." And David said to him, "How did things go? Please tell me." And he said, "The people have fled from the battle, and also many of the people have fallen and are dead, and Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead also." I imagine at this point, now David, you have to realize, David had already heard certain things about, what had taken place, because in the last chapter we see that. And so here, you have to imagine, as this man said this, two extreme emotions probably came out of David, or emotions in David. First of all, grief for his best friend, Jonathan, one that he loved dearly, and Jonathan loved him dearly, and we see that at the very end of this chapter. But not only grief, but I think maybe a little bit relief that Saul is gone as well. Now, I'm not saying that David rejoiced over that, but you have to remember Saul nonstop had been chasing David to kill him. And at one point, David said, "Your father's going to kill me. There's one step between me and death." So I have to think, in one sense, yes, great grief over Jonathan, but a certain amount of relief because Saul is now dead. And the one that he feared most, because he was pursuing David. Now, remember when the second time that David saved Saul's life, when they went down into the camp and took the spear and the jug of water, and he revealed himself. Later, David revealed himself. And he said, "Abner, I thought you were a good guard of your master, Saul. Here's his spear and here's his jug of water. We could have rammed him through, but we didn't." And one of his men wanted to, but David said, "No, you can't touch God's anointed and be without guilt. We can't kill Saul. He's God's anointed. God anointed him, put him into office." And then he said to his men, "Maybe God's going to strike Saul, or that he just simply dies, or that he goes down to battle and perishes." You see, David already thought or knew that this could be the way that Saul could die, and that is exactly the way Saul died. And so you can think, in one sense, that David's thinking, "You know what? That's exactly what I said to one of my mighty men. And he's gone down to battle and died." So David, in no way is he rejoicing over the fact that Saul is dead, but I think there's a certain amount of relief. You see, here, the word had, maybe it was a rumor, maybe it was speculation, but the word had come that Saul and Jonathan are dead, but there was no evidence. And now here, this man thinking that maybe he can gain an advantage with David and give him good news that the one that's been chasing you, the one that wanted to kill you, the one who, at least from this man's perspective, was your enemy, your adversary, he's dead. That's not good news to David. And in a sense, it might have relieved him a little bit of realizing he's not going to be chased anymore, and the threat of Saul is not going to happen anymore. But it was bad news to David, because Saul was God's anointed. And so David, in verse 5, said to the young man who told him, "How do you know that Saul and his son Jonathan are dead?" And the young man who told him said, "By chance, I happened to be on Mount Gilboa, and behold, Saul was leaning on his spear." Now remember, it said that Saul had tried to put himself to death. And in the last chapter of 1 Samuel, it said he leaned on his sword and he died. Okay. Here's a controversy from what this man said. Either he's lying or he tried to put himself to death. But remember, Saul was clothed in armor. And that armor is protection. And so possibly he did try to die in his sword, but there was faint life within him. And that's what's happening here. There's still some life within him. And behold, the chariots, he said in verse 6, and horsemen pursued him closely. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called me and said, and I said, here I am. And he said to me, who are you? And I answered, and I said, I am an Amalekite. So here, the whole scenario that's going on. Now, whether this man is telling the truth or not, again, on either side of the commentaries, there are both sides of it. Saul, the man is saying, Saul said, who are you? Because Saul didn't want to be put to death by the Philistines so that the Philistines could gloat and go brag that they took Saul's life. So first of all, he told his armor bearer, take my life. The armor bearer wasn't going to do it. He looks, he sees this guy. He finds out he's not a Philistine, he's an Amalekite. So he says, put me to death if the man is telling the truth. Very interesting. And so this fella, maybe in his mind, maybe this man is thinking, you know, I can gain an advantage by telling David that I put his adversary to death. And maybe that's what's going on. And David, verse 9, and he said, please stand beside, No, the man is saying, he said to me, Saul said to me, please stand beside me and kill me, for agony has seized me because of my life still lingers in me. So I stood beside him and killed him because I knew that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown, which was in his on his head, and the bracelet, which was on his arm, and I have brought them here to my Lord. So the whole scenario. Okay. Did he kill him? I mean, still faint life in Saul, didn't want to be put to death by the Philistines unless they gloat over what they did and brag about it. But notice what the man said about Saul. He said that I'm in agony. I'm in agony. That would be very true physically. Yeah, agony, because, you know, you're wounded, and now you've fallen on your sword, your spear. But it's not only that. He had to have, in his dying breath, a guilty conscience. An agonizing, guilty conscience. Those that don't deal with misdeeds and sins, their last breath, they're in agony over that guilty conscience. Think about it. Here, David, pursuing David. David's innocent. And here Saul is pursuing him. Killing the priest of Nob Hill, the 85 priests of Nob, seeking out that witch to discern the will of the Lord instead of going to the Lord, being disobedient to God and his calling. You have to believe he had a radical guilty conscience. And so I think he's in agony at this point. And notice what the Amalekite said, that I stood beside him and killed him. And I think when he said that, when I stood beside him and killed him, I think at that point, as he was looking at David, he saw David's countenance change when he heard that this Amalekite killed Saul. I think his whole countenance changed. And then I think at this point, maybe that Amalekite, he tried to justify himself, and he said, and I knew he couldn't live. I knew that when he fell, he was going to die. And then he says, oh, here are the tokens, the king's crown and the bracelet. You see, that was the royal insignia. These belong to you. Boy. Bad news for this guy. You see, as I mentioned, it could be that Saul fell on his sword, there was still faint life, and the Amalekite finished him off, or this Amalekite was just flat out lying. He was lying to try to ingratiate himself to David, and he took the crown, he took the bracelet. You see, if he did kill Saul, you have to realize he was killed by one that Saul rebelled against the living God in carrying out the command to utterly obliterate and destroy the Amalekites. He didn't. He saved the best of the flock and in the herds, and he saved Agag, and he let a lot of them go. He was killed by the one that he was commanded to utterly destroy. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? He let the Amalekites go when God said, no, I've determined that they are utterly to be destroyed, and now Saul was destroyed or killed by an Amalekite. You see, when you look at biblical typology, the Amalekites are a type of the flesh. And when we put that in a spiritual application to our lives, think about it, our flesh. We're a new creation in Christ Jesus. We no longer walk after the flesh, but we walk after the Spirit. The Bible tells us to mortify the deeds of the flesh or put to death the deeds of the flesh in Romans chapter 8. The Bible tells us, don't you know that your old life, your old self was crucified with Christ? The flesh life was crucified with Christ. It's no longer you that live, but Christ that lives in you. Paul said, I've been crucified with Christ. I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The Bible tells us, give no place for the flesh to fulfill the desires or the lust of the flesh. So the Amalekites, a type of our flesh. You see, when we let it reign and rule, when we let it survive, when the Lord says, no, put to death those deeds of the flesh, those passions. By the Spirit, put to death the deeds of the flesh. The mind of the flesh is death. When we don't, you can find that that flesh life will ultimately and eventually conquer and rule over our life. God gives us everything for life and godliness. But you see, we're never going to be able to reform the flesh. There's no reformation of the flesh.
And that's where we'll finish on today's edition of As We Gather with Pastor Bill Stonebreaker. This was a portion of a weekly Bible study from the book of 2 Samuel, chapters 1 and 2. You can hear this message again by visiting CalvaryChapelHonolulu.com and take advantage of our media archive. We really appreciate any support from our listeners. Your encouragement and prayer go a long way for this ministry. If you'd like to support the As We Gather media ministry, you can give securely online at CalvaryChapelHonolulu.com. And for those who would like to be a regular sponsor, you can set up a recurring gift on the schedule of your choice. May the Lord richly bless you as you walk with Him today.
As we gather, may your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin to worship, we'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came. As we gather, may your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin, we'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came. As we gather, may your Spirit work within us. As we gather, may we glorify your name. Knowing well that as our hearts begin, we'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came.
Next time on As We Gather, we'll continue in 2 Samuel chapters 1 and 2. Until then, aloha and agape.
We'll be blessed because we came. We'll be blessed because we came. Yeah, we'll be blessed because we came.